The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And welcome to the Water Cooler, everybody. I'm David Brody. Thanks for being here. It's Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. Today, we bring you an exclusive interview. And look, I know you're thinking it's my mother. Sorry, hate to disappoint you. I'm still trying, by the way, for that one. Instead, we have the second best person, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. That's right, he's going to be on the show today. He was a hit down at CPAC in Orlando this past weekend. Actually, he made the top five on that CPAC 2024 presidential straw poll. Not too shabby. He's no nonsense for sure. He did not abandon Donald Trump after January 6th, so the MAGA faithful love him for that. We're going to speak to him about politics, foreign policy under the Biden administration, and our culture that is spiraling out of control. So buckle your seatbelts. I love that phrase. Also today, Andrew Cuomo. Oy gevolt, does anybody have an Excedrin? Can he survive? He came out today, said he would not resign. He got a bit teary-eyed, but hey, he first had the nursing home death scandal, right? Now, of course, all the sexual harassment allegations. I mean, what's making matters worse for him, here's the problem. Even Democrats are turning on him in New York. And guess what? Even today, the liberal media, believe it or not, piling on him and the Democrats. That is a bad, bad sign. Where's Joe Biden? I don't know. Can't find him. Oh, I forgot this as well. He has a lot of enemies, so that doesn't help either. We're going to unpack it all. And so much for Neera Tanden. She's gone, done, finito. I like that word. The Biden administration nominated her for budget director, but they are now directing her exit stage left, actually stage far left. By the way, her vicious social media tweets caught up with her. That was the problem. And the Biden administration knew she couldn't even get 50 Democrats to support her. So they said, you're done. You are political toast. But first, our exclusive interview with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Now that he's out of office, he has landed a couple of pretty good gigs. He's now senior counsel for global affairs at the American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLJ, and also distinguished fellow at the Hudson Institute. And by the way, Madison, I just want to say I'd like to be called distinguished anchor of the Water Cooler, if you don't mind. Hopefully we're going to get a title change. Anyhow, I've known Mike Pompeo for a while now. I've traveled with him to Kuwait and Israel in the last couple of years, and I got to see his America First priorities on display right there on the world stage, and that's where we begin our conversation. Secretary Pompeo, great to see you again. Really appreciate you being here.
It's great to be with you as well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, let's talk about the Biden administration. What's been kind of a top concern of yours, maybe disappointment, call it whatever you want, but as it relates to this first 100-day period that you've seen so far?
You know, the big picture challenge is that they just think about America's place in the world so differently than the Trump administration did, right? We had America First at the center of everything we did. Our task, my duty as a Secretary of State was to protect and defend and make prosperous the United States of America first and always. And when we did that, good things happened around the world. We were a force for good. This administration seems to have a different set of priorities. They're going back into the Paris Climate Accords, and it looks like they want to go back into the JCPOA with Iran. These are not things that are good for American workers, American people all across different walks of life. And it presents a real risk to the United States if we get it wrong.
Secretary Pompeo, I want to ask you about Israel for a moment. I have to tell you, I thought of you the other day when I saw that Biden had not called Netanyahu for, what was it, at least a month or so, more than a month? I'm not quite sure, but I thought of you thinking, what in the world would Mike Pompeo think of that? Specifically, what kind of message do you think that sent to Israel exactly?
We worked so hard and made such enormous progress building out a concept for peace in the Middle East. And that include our amazing friends in the Jewish homeland of Israel. I work so closely with Prime Minister Netanyahu and his whole team, and we all did, to create what became the Abraham Accords. They were premised on a central understanding that that Israel had a rightful place and that Israel had the responsibility and duty to protect its own people. Mm-hmm. And that if they did that, if we did that well, and we supported Gulf states and their efforts to take care of their own countries, and we pushed back against the central threat to Israel, which is in fact the Islamic Republic of Iran's regime. If we did those things, these countries would come together. And we saw that it was amazing. These Abraham Accords are historic.
Yep.
And I hope that they remain. I hope that the Biden administration can see that this is something that they should build on. There's more work to do. And it would be a great legacy for them if they could continue to grow peace and stability in the Middle East. Unfortunately, it appears they're going back to appeasing Iran as a central understanding in the Middle East.
I want to get to Iran in a moment. As for Israel, the Trump administration, pro-Israel, no brainer, no fact check needed. What about the Biden administration? Are you concerned that they will not be pro-Israel, if you will?
I do worry. Historically, it's been bipartisan. It hasn't been a Republican deal or a Democrat deal. Mm-hmm. Americans understood that Israel was this special place that we all knew and loved and was a great security partner and a great economic partner on top of all of that. Mm-hmm. This administration was awfully slow on the draw with respect to Israel. We know the history of the Obama administration where they didn't do right by Israel in so many ways, certainly with respect to security versus the threat from Iran. I hope this administration will take a different course of action. We shared the desire for a better life for the Palestinian people, but we knew that you couldn't allow the Palestinians to have a veto on peace and stability in the Middle East. And so yeah. We moved on, we moved out, we continued to execute our plan, and we did that. I hope this administration will treat Israel in the way that it deserves and its people so desperately need a good friend here in the United States.
You just mentioned the word appeasement to a degree when it comes to Iran. Do you believe this Biden administration is in the appeasement business when it comes to dealing with Iran?
So far, they have taken a terrorist organization that is underwritten and sponsored by Iran, the Houthis that exist in Yemen, Iranian-backed, to be sure. No one disputes that they're terrorists. No one disputes right. that. And yet they de-designated them. We saw last week that they gave a wink and a nod to what appears to be enormous financial relief to the Iranian regime. We put massive pressure on the regime, and it looks like they're going to allow billions of dollars in wealth to go from South Korea and the IMF into Iran and essentially take a foot off the stranglehold that we had on the Iranian regime. This is not a good start. And when the administration said they wanted to go back into a conversation, into negotiations, the Iranians said, no, we're not ready to do that because I think they believe that if they resist, they can get yet more concession, more appeasement. I hope that's not the right direction. There are Americans held hostage. There's a missile program. Yeah. There's an active set of violations of the JCPOA that threaten the United States and Israel. We need to be strong. And when we're strong, the Iranians will respect that and it will deter terror from that region.
Sounds like you're concerned about appeasement for sure.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, for sure. On China, I need to ask you, at the end of the administration, you seem to be hinting about where this, specifically where this Wuhan virus, this China virus came from, possibly in a lab accidentally or whatever the case may be. Do you still hold that view? If so, what are you thinking about that now in terms of evidence that you see?
So I actually wrote something that appeared in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was last week, along with Dr. Miles Yu, who worked with me at the State Department. And we outlined a part, the piece that is non-classified, about what we know about where this virus came from. And there's three things that we can say for sure. First, we're very confident that it came from Wuhan, China. Even the Chinese don't dispute that. Yeah. We know the actions that were taking place in the Wuhan lab. We know that there's evidence that there were individuals working there that became ill at the end of 2019 and something that had a set of conditions that could well have been the virus that has now spread across the world and killed millions of people. We know that the Chinese Communist Party has prevented anyone from knowing where this originated. Even the WHO investigators who went in were denied the information they needed. Mm-hmm. So with the data and the cover-up, there is ample evidence to make the claim that the Chinese Communist Party owes the world an explanation and to make the case that it didn't come from this laboratory.
Yeah. So at this point, you're saying you're not sure either way whether or not it came from this lab?
Nope. We don't know for sure, but there's ample evidence and a cover-up that probably is worse than the initial problem set inside the lab that we know, right? We know mm-hmm. we know these Chinese labs that were doing this mm-hmm. bio research have had escapes before. Mm-hmm. And we know that they were working on things that were of the nature that could have led to this. So we have ample evidence. We can't say for sure. I'm afraid we may never know for sure, David. But the Chinese Communist Party must be held accountable for denying the world access to making sure we understand how this happened so that we can prevent something like this from ever happening again.
I want to ask you about religious freedom, obviously something that you took over at the State Department and really marched the ball forward on for sure with the ministerial conferences, many of them. What do you make of what the Biden administration is doing now on religious freedom? There were some, I mean, the Uyghur Muslims, I mean, there were some comments by Biden the other day that just were head scratching. What's your take on what this administration has been doing on religious freedom so far?
Well, so far, they haven't done much, and I will concede it's early. So I want to give them the opportunity to get this right. But the United States under President Trump and the team that I built out, Governor Brownback, Ambassador Brownback, who was working on religious freedom as the ambassador for religious freedom, really advanced the ball all across the United States of America. We held these huge events. You referenced these ministerials. They have made progress on religious freedom all around the world. And in Western China, what's taking place to these Uyghur Muslims and what's happening to Christians throughout other parts of China and the Falun Gong, all these religions are being denied these basic fundamental rights to practice their faith. The United States has a responsibility to Americans and to people all across the world to make sure that any individual who wants to exercise their personal faith has the right to do so.
That is Mike Pompeo here on The Water Cooler. Don't worry, that was just 8 minutes of Mike Pompeo. We're just starting here on The Water Cooler. We've got at least 5-6 more minutes with him. We're going to do that in the next block. He's going to talk about politics, all the political implications of the future of the Republican Party. And we've got to talk about Donald Trump. Donald Trump would want us, I'm sure, to talk about Donald Trump. He's also going to talk about Mitch McConnell, Nikki Haley, some of the folks that, in essence, abandoned him after January 6th in terms of what happened on that day. And he's going to talk about the Judeo-Christian fabric. Whoops, my bad. I said Judeo-Christian fabric of our country. What, is big tech going to come get me? Anyhow, we talked to Mike Pompeo about that and multiculturalism and all the isms that are going on in America. Mike Pompeo very concerned about all of that. More with our conversation with the former Secretary of State in a moment. Back in a moment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to The Water Cooler, everybody. It says The Water Cooler with David Brody, but actually today it's The Water Cooler with Mike Pompeo. We have an exclusive interview with the former Secretary of State. And you know, hey, 2024, Mike Pompeo, he could run for president. He's thinking about it. All right, he's not going to say that publicly, but we all know he's thinking about it. And we're going to see what happens with that. It's something I asked him in this second part of the interview, along with the Judeo-Christian fabric of America. He's a Christian. He wears it on his sleeve, not afraid to talk about it. So we get into that. But we start with politics, specifically Donald Trump, the future of the Republican Party, and the Republicans and conservatives who went against Donald Trump after January 6th, all part of our conversation with Mike Pompeo. Mike Pompeo, I want to just transition to a few political questions and we'll be done. CPAC over this last weekend in Orlando, rave reviews coming after your speech. You actually finished in the top five of that, the old CPAC straw poll. What's your sense as to where the conservative movement goes, where you potentially may go in 2024? I know you're going to say the 2022 answer. I get it. I know. But there's a lot of folks that would love to see you potentially run for president. Where are you on that?
So, David, we just got to make sure that this movement continues. It's something that's been in my heart and in my family. We're conservative believers. We are Christian followers of Jesus. And I want to make sure that our party, the work that we do, continues to build on the glorious legacy of the conservative movement. And I saw that. It was a lot of fun to be down in Orlando this weekend. It's normally here in Washington. I vote Florida. It was a wonderful place to be with great people. I had a chance to say some things that I couldn't say when I was Secretary of State. I was able just to let it rip just a little bit more and talk about America First and the work that we did and why it matters and why that path is the right path forward. There'll be lots of people who want to contend to lead this movement. We need each and every one of us working together to help build it out. And 2022 does matter. Today, the Democrats are in charge of both houses of Congress and the White House. That is something that will work to the detriment of the American people.
You know, speaking of letting it rip, here we are. You know, look, Mitch McConnell, there's been some other Republicans as well, and Nikki Haley have been critical of this president, or as of Donald Trump, the president, when it came to January 6th. What do you say to folks like them, other Republicans, who have tried to distance themselves from this president as it relates to that day and possibly even beyond in terms of the future of the Republican Party?
President Trump built out an enormous legacy. If you look at the work that we did, and then you look at what conservatives think about that work, this is the path that America needs to head down. I don't understand it. I must say, you use the term head scratcher. It is an enormous head scratcher for me when people waver about the legacy of the work that President Trump and our team did for these past 4 years. It's the right direction. It's the direction the conservative movement needs to continue to head. And when I see Republicans step away and not embrace what it is right for the American people and for our movement, I just don't get it.
Yeah, and when you say head scratching, you're talking about Republicans within the party that are trying to, is that what you're referring to?
Yes, exactly. It doesn't make any sense to me. The work that we did, we had people back to work. We had borders that were secure and sovereign. We had people working diligently to make sure that we could practice our faith wherever. We did all the things that are the historic country. We built a Department of Defense, a military that was strong, and we loved our soldiers and our veterans. That's the right direction. It's what President Trump did.
Yeah, I think the concern, I think from some people, aren't so much the accomplishments. I'm talking about the Mitch McConnells and Nikki Haley's. I think the concern was how January 6th happened. I think that might be more the concern. So I don't know.
I watched January 6th unfold. It was an enormous security failure. I know a lot of people who were down there. We had friends from Kansas call us and say, we're coming to Washington on the 6th.
Yeah.
There are people from our church back home. Those are folks who just wanted to come express their enormous disappointment with the outcome from the election and the fact that they weren't giving up. They were still in the fight. And I want to be alongside them. I want to be with them in that fight.
As we wrap up here, there was a tweet you put out. You got some hits on it. I'm just curious what you meant by it, about multiculturalism. You know, the liberals love to take swipes. And you mentioned how you said multiculturalism and all the isms, they're not who America is. They distort our glorious founding and what this country is all about. What did you mean by that? I think a lot of people, conservatives, would agree, but I think the liberals probably took it out of context.
David, the liberals always want to snark at you for when you make a simple statement. That is, America has this amazing tradition. It was not a founding that was wrong, and we don't want to divide. They want to talk about groups and this group and that group. We want an America that has a central understanding of freedom and love, and this idea that we love America. We love the founding. We love the idea that if you work hard and tell the truth and keep your faith, that you can be successful in America. And we want that forever. We don't want to divide by color or race or anything else. We want every American to have that same opportunity. And so when I hear these isms, when I see people focus so much on subgroups, I know that they're aiming to divide and not to build. And that's the wrong direction for the United States of America.
And if we wrap up the spiritual question, of course, you know, got to ask you the spiritual question, which is, where is this country from a spiritual standpoint? I mean, if you say Judeo-Christian values today, or this nation is a Judeo-Christian nation, you know, liberals will call it hate speech. I mean, they will. I mean, you know, they're off their rocker, but that's what they'll do. So what has happened to this country as it relates to the from a spiritual standpoint?
Two things, David, I know for sure. I know he's watching over us. This is a very special nation that I have been so privileged to grow up in and to be a part of. It's given me so much and so many people so much. And second, those of us who believe that, those of us who understand the founding and understand the Judeo-Christian traditions of the United States of America, have every responsibility to be bold, to speak about this, to be proud of this heritage, and to continue to build on it. And when we do, those voices will be heard and America will continue to be the greatest nation in the history of civilization. I'm very confident of that.
Mike Pompeo, always great to see you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Mike Pompeo here on The Water Cooler. All right, we're done with Mike Pompeo, but guess what we're not done with? We haven't even started. It is time for the poll of the day.
The Water Cooler. Poll of the Day.
All right, here we go. That's Mike Pompeo's voice, isn't it? No, it's not. All right, who deserves more credit for the development of the COVID-19 vaccines? The Trump administration gets 31% of the credit, according to this poll. The Biden administration, I'm sorry, don't make me laugh, 17%? What did they do? I'm confused. There wasn't even a vaccine when they were, don't get me started. And then 52%, a whopping 52%, say, actually, give the credit to the companies and scientists who developed the vaccine. And of course, that's true. I mean, clearly, now the Trump administration clearly sped up the timetable, though Democrats and liberals will say that wasn't the case. They actually heard blah, blah, blah. Give me a break. Bottom line is, if you look on the record, I'm not making this up. This is a fact check, straight up. The vaccine, the first vaccine, came on the watch of the Trump administration. That doesn't need a fact check, Washington Post. Back in a moment.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. It's great to have Mike Pompeo on the show for the first couple blocks of the show. And, you know, continuing the ACLJ theme, you know, Mike Pompeo with the ACLJ now. Hey, let's just keep going. Why not? We're on a roll. Jordan Sekulow with, wait for it, the ACLJ is here, the executive director. Jordan, always great to see you, sir.
Thanks for having me, David.
All right, so let's talk about H.R. 1. There's been a lot of conservative criticism about this bill. Apparently, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, they clearly love it, and they love it so much they called it H.R. 1. What are the big concerns? What do people need to understand about this bill?
Well, I mean, I think obviously knowing that it's no longer about COVID relief, and they've tried to, now it's an American Rescue Plan. So they've even kind of rebranded it because it doesn't make sense, because only a small percent of the bill actually goes directly to issues that were involved COVID. So that the parts that are popular, getting more relief, stimulus checks out to people, pension reform, reform on evictions, things like that, that are pretty bipartisan, okay, we could all agree with and would have passed a long time ago. Why are we still at this point where the House passed a piece of legislation, H.R. 1, that the Senate couldn't even just accept if they wanted to, because their parliamentarian said under this rule of reconciliation to get around the filibuster, which this would never be able to get 60 votes to do that, you can't do a minimum wage increase to $15. But you got Bernie Sanders saying that we should fire the parliamentarian or have Kamala Harris come in as president of the Senate, which is her job as vice president, one of the jobs of vice president, and overrule the parliamentarian, which there's not really precedent for, but the Senate can make up its own rules. We learned that through impeachment trials. So there's that part, David. Then there's also the amount of funding to abortion. There's no Hyde Amendment protections in there that stop our taxpayer dollars from going to fund abortion. They've taken that all out of this budgetary, this nightmare, if you will. And we'll ultimately see what the Senate comes up with, and then it has to go back to the House again. And this is just delaying real relief to American people.
Yeah, for sure. And so what you're talking about, obviously, is this COVID bill is really their number one priority. And you wonder if it's even going to they're going to push this through. I don't think there's any question about it. The question is how liberals are going to be at this point, right?
Yeah. How bad is it? You know, are we going to get back in Hyde Amendment protections because of moderate Democrats like Joe Manchin? Are we going to, so that they just have to keep that, which has been in all these budget bills for decades? That you're not going to force Americans to fund abortion. That's all. It doesn't make abortion illegal. It just means you're not going to force Americans to fund it. And that's not there. That protection's not there. And of course, just the massive amount of money, the idea that they want to do the minimum, that's still, a lot of people are still learning. They're acting like that is dead in the Senate unless they take some extreme measures. I think Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema will be able to block this and water this down. But I think, you know, as we're on the water cooler, I think that's what we're talking about, is how watered down does it get? not how bipartisan it becomes.
Right. And so there's that priority, a number one priority for the Biden administration. And then there's, as we've been talking about, H.R. 1. And I want to put up H.R. 1 specifically, because this is what Nancy Pelosi and the folks have passed in years past. They want to expand access to the ballot box. That sounds a bit dangerous. Democrats would say it's not dangerous at all. They say, you know, it's the Republicans that are scared of this bill. But I know there's concern about dark money in here, and also about, you know, there's quite a bit of other things as well. So yeah. I'm just wondering what your take on Democrats, in essence, trying to change the election structure of America from a federal standpoint. I mean, this is crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in our history, there have been very limited times where the federal government has been able to step in on anything election related because of the way the Constitution is written, and that ultimately these are supposed to be decided by the states. The Voting Rights Act is one of those laws, and most of that has been repealed either legislatively or the Supreme Court's come in and said, too long, you've applied this to these states. These states have moved on. They've done the right thing. We no longer need to be involved with the federal government. This is a time where when they say expand access, they mean how many more people that are be unverified voters, how much more ballot harvesting can we do through outside groups that aren't the actual state, how many signatures do we not have to verify, and of course the universal mail-in ballot, this idea that we'll just send them out, which if you had lived in a couple places in the last 10 years since the census at least, you received live ballots at places you no longer vote in. I got them. I had a lot of people showed that, and they weren't just requests for a live ballot. They were the actual real ballots that were just sitting around in mailboxes. So that's what they mean, unfortunately, and it makes you sound like you're somehow against, you're somehow disenfranchising people when you oppose this. Yeah. And that's exactly what they want, is language that makes us sound like we're trying to disenfranchise voters, when in a sense we're just trying to protect people's votes.
Well, that's right. Jordan, now, before we let you go, I want you to tell me a little bit about a brief that you over at the ACLG, you folks filed. Yeah. It's about basically, well, explain it, but you're urging what, the Supreme Court to extend greater protection, in essence, against the threat to First Amendment rights from cancel culture.
So what we saw is that there are only three states. The federal government does not require nonprofit groups to disclose their donors, even in a private way, to the IRS. So the federal government doesn't do this. But California, New York, and Hawaii have started to require this, and they've used percentages and different things applied to different groups. So California did it, and these groups, they complied with the law. But California had no confidentiality protections in. So they built a website using college students and contract workers that wasn't secure, that they say was hacked, but really anybody could get access to. So if you donated to a conservative group, people were getting death threats and they were getting contracts getting canceled culture. So California didn't say, David, oh, we're sorry, we messed up because this became public. They're defending this in court. It's Javier Becerra, the Attorney General, who is now of California, who's the nominee to be HHS Secretary, which is very controversial. And California says, no, we don't have to protect this information. We can actually put it out publicly if we want to. So this is going to be a huge test. The Supreme Court's taking the case. Could your states force conservative groups and liberal groups to disclose their donor information? What that will do to stifle speech. I mean, think about what that would have done to stifle speech during the civil rights movement. The Supreme Court stepped in and said, no, you can't force the NAACP to release their donor list. They should do the same thing again here.
Well, that is a case to watch for sure. Jordan Seculo, always great to see you, sir. Thanks for coming on the show every week. We really appreciate you.
Thanks, David.
All right. Jordan Seculo, executive director with the ACLJ. And by the way, it kind of gets to a longer issue here, a longer story, which is, wait a minute, if you donate to some sort of group and all of a sudden there's not protections involved in terms of having access to your information, well, guess what? In cancel culture, they could easily come after you. I say they. Who's they? You know, the federal government, or in this case, the state of California. It just depends. Anyhow, that is scary, scary stuff, especially in the America that we live in today. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Liz Harrington about quite a few things, including Andrew Cuomo. Can he survive? It's not looking good, folks. Back in a moment.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. We talked about at the top of the show how Andrew Cuomo is in hot water. And guess what? Apparently he's going to stay there because he's not going anywhere. He said today he is refusing to resign. He says, wait, got all the facts have to come out. He did nothing wrong. Or he said I can tell you specifically what he said. He said, I apologize for whatever pain I caused anyone. But he said, I never touched anyone inappropriately. He says he wants all the facts to come out. So that's his story. Apparently, he's sticking with it. We'll see if he survives. He's clearly in the doghouse. We put him there here at the Water Cooler. Not only have we put him in the doghouse, there he is, Andrew Cuomo. I think he's going to stay there for a while. I don't know about you, but leave it to us at the Water Cooler to literally put people in the doghouse. All right. You know who's not in the doghouse? Liz Harrington. She's the former GOP national spokesperson, editor-in-chief of War Room. Liz, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, David, thanks for having me.
Well, this is the, I was about to say Mario Cuomo again. I'm dating myself, my gosh. The Andrew Cuomo double down. I mean, he's not, look, he did we really expect him to kind of like slink away? We didn't expect that.
No, but I think it's far more interesting that all of this is coming out now, really a year too late, mm-hmm. because really, he should have had a microscope under his administration the second he was sending seniors back into nursing homes with positive COVID test results. That's where the media should have been all over him. That's when people should have been coming forward. That's when he should have gone down. And we'll see. He says he's not going anywhere. But it's because the Democrat political machine, all they care about is the ends justify the means. And that would have hurt them politically in an election year. That would have hurt them when they were busy trying to steal the 2020 election. So all of this was swept under the rug, whether it's allegations of sexual assault, whether it's the absolute disgusting policies that they had that led to tens of thousands of seniors dying. All of that was dismissed. I mean, is Andrew Cuomo going to return his Emmy now? Is he going to stop selling his creepy art that he profited off of during this pandemic? I mean, he's got so many issues, but the real problem is that this didn't come out before, and now it doesn't even really matter at this point to a lot of people in New York.
No, it's pathetic. You know, and where's Joe Biden? Can someone tell me, I mean, where in the world is Joe Biden on this? This is the hashtag Me Too. It just shocks me, maybe not rhetorically, maybe it doesn't. Sarcastically, but I mean, I don't know. He maybe goes for a nap and then he goes to bed at 7. He's not speaking about this whatsoever. Now, the media, Liz, on the other hand, they were very slow, as you might imagine, to say anything. Now they're finally starting to say a few things. Axios, as a matter of fact, is pretty liberal out there. They're actually out with talking about Democrats' hypocrisy. As a matter of fact, here it is. This was from Mike Allen's Axios report today. Democrats' hypocrisy moment. And they say Governor Andrew Cuomo should be facing explicit calls to resign from President. And this is the liberal media saying this. They say from President Biden on down. If you apply the standard, the Democrats, and they go on. Anyhow, your take.
Well, absolutely, if they had a standard, but they don't, clearly. Where is Joe Biden? Where is he, period? I mean, what is he doing? He can't do any interviews without Jill Biden being there, Dr. Jill Biden. Excuse me for getting wrong.
Come on, Liz, get your facts straight, please.
For 40 days, he hasn't done a presidential press conference. What happened to democracy dies in darkness? He can't even stand up there and take any questions, which we know they'd be softballs, from the press. I mean, he's pretending to be the president of the United States. When is he going to start acting like it? When is he going to get out there? I mean, President Trump would do it for 2 hours on end with all of the attacks coming in and answer all of the tough questions. He'd always have an answer. He'd always have a straight one. Biden does it. They don't even pretend. They're just doing this government regime on autopilot. All these people behind the scenes making the decisions, and Biden's just the puppet. But he's not going to call for Cuomo to resign. He doesn't even know where he is.
No, you're absolutely right. He's not going to call for that at all. I want to move over to HR1 before we let you go. This is obviously the big one. I say the big one, literally, excuse me, the number one. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have been doing this for a while now. They want access. They call it, I'm sorry, expand Americans' access to the ballot box. I'm reading it like that, Liz, because it sounds so wonderful. But hold on. There's a lot of stuff tucked inside that bill. And it's HR1 for a reason. Because this is the whole ballgame, is it not, when it comes to, in essence, federalizing elections and doing a whole lot more in this bill?
Absolutely correct. This is why it's number one for them. They want to make permanent the stolen election of November 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. That's what this bill is. This is what Nancy Pelosi, all last year when she was delaying checks to Americans, when she was flying in from San Francisco and blowing up the bipartisan negotiations for the CARES Act, this is what it was about. She was trying to slip this in. This would nationalize ballot harvesting, which is voter fraud. It would ban voter ID at a time when it's critical to get election integrity. This blows it all up. This makes it permanent what the fraud we saw in Fulton County and Wayne County and Maricopa County. But mind you, Arizona, they're finally going to get to the bottom of it. It starts today. 2.1 million ballots in Maricopa County are going to be gone through one by one. That's what we need to do for elections, not this monstrosity. We really need people to act and mobilize against this, call their senators. If this passes the House, we need to get the Senate to stop it, because this would destroy elections and we'd never have a free and fair one again in this country.
Well, I guess the good news at this point, even though it's a Democrat-controlled, technically a Democrat-controlled Senate, it's not going anywhere. They're going to need 60 votes for this. They can't do this on reconciliation, so that it's not going to happen, right?
We still need to, I mean, they have no standards. We've been over it again and again, right? Yeah. They'll try to find ways to slip this in and different aspects of it. It's so dangerous, and we have to stand firm against it.
Yeah. All right. Liz Harrington, all the best. Really appreciate you coming on, as always. And, you know, you're such an introvert when it comes to these issues. I never know where you stand. So thank you. Just kidding. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Liz Harrington, not an introvert, for sure. But I'll tell you what, we like having her. I'm sorry, let me correct that. We love having her on the show for a lot of different reasons. But she is in the know, number one. She operates from a very important set of facts that the mainstream media, I'm sorry, I always get sucked in the mainstream media, the liberal media just won't talk about, which is interesting in and of itself, because the media loves to craft storylines. That's what it's all about. It's a latte sipping echo chamber out there. And how can conservatives break through all of that? It's the Acela corridor, as they say, New York, DC, and the latte sipping liberals. That's what it's all about. Back in a moment.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. Time for ka-ching. It's my own sound effect. The last sip. Thank you very much. And by the way, I do ka-ching because normally in television you have to pay for sound effects. But if I just go ka-ching, you don't have to pay for it. It's free. So you're welcome. Not that you had to pay for it. Anyhow, the last sip. Mike Pompeo on the show today. If you haven't seen it, just go rewind the tape. I know it's 1975 when I say rewind the tape, but go back and look at the interview. As I pat myself on the back, I thought it was a pretty good interview. He was at CPAC this past weekend, and he did very well on that CPAC straw poll about who should run for president in 2024. He came in like top five. Of course, Trump was number one, but then after that, Mike Pompeo was like at 7%, so that's pretty good. And let's take a look at this poll that we put up a couple times this week, but I want to bring it up up again, because if you read the polls, says other than former President Trump, which of these Republicans would you most trust to run for president? Look at Ron DeSantis. He's at 21%. That's not surprising. Governor of Florida. Yeah, he's been like, give me a break on COVID with the relaxation of the rules. Ted Cruz at 18%. That's to be expected to a degree. Nikki Haley was a bit surprising at 10% based on some of the flack that she's received by traditional MAGA conservatives. And there he is, Mike Pompeo at 9%, which, if you think about it, makes quite a bit of sense. During this time with Donald Trump and the fact that he has stood by Donald Trump's side, not just for all 4 years of the Trump administration, but after January 6th, there's kind of a delineation line, a delineation mark, if you will. And there are certain Republicans, Mitch McConnell, Nikki Haley, some others, quite a few others, who said, I'm pretty much done with this, the way they believe he behaved and all of that. And so they kind of had some strong words for him specifically on January 6th about what happened. Mike Pompeo, however, did not. As a matter of fact, in our interview today, he stood right side by side with the president, the former president. And as a matter of fact, in the interview earlier today, he basically said that the people that were protesting the election on January 6th, he says, I'm going to stand alongside, those were his words, alongside those folks that came on January 6th to protest the election. And so, look, that's going to make him more appealing, more appetizing to the MAGA base. Now, you know, obviously the presidential election a long time away. We'll see what happens. This is Trump's party. You can cry if you want to. Look it up, Gen Zers. But the bottom line is, it is Trump's party. However, Mike Pompeo, get ready. He could have a 2024 presidential run in him. Oh, and by the way, did I say these words or this name? Kristi Noem. Watch out for her. She'll be on the water cooler soon. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. Big story today. Andrew Cuomo speaking, saying he's not going to resign. Sophie Mann with us, the anchor of Just the News AM. Sophie, big deal today.
Big deal. Yeah, I think what we're going to do right now is take a look at some of the most shocking moments from Andrew Cuomo's press conference that happened a little bit earlier today.
Feel uncomfortable and in the workplace.
Were you also speaking to New Yorkers, Governor?
Oh, to New Yorkers, I am saying that I'm embarrassed by what happened. I wear a pin that says pride, integrity, performance. That's what it says on the pin. You can't read it. Pride, integrity, performance. So I'm embarrassed that someone felt that way in my administration. I'm embarrassed and hurt, and I apologize that somebody who interacted with me felt that way. Again, I didn't know at the time.
You know, here's the thing. Can I just say, sorry, where's my soapbox? But real quick. Sorry that they felt that way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really tired of that. Mm-hmm. I'm really tired of that. I mean, if you're going to take responsibility, take responsibility. Sorry. Okay, now back to the news.
Well, you know, this is something we've seen a lot of from Andrew Cuomo the past year. I mean, even a couple of months ago at a coronavirus press conference, it seemed that he was blaming the elderly for dying in the nursing home.
Right, I remember that.
Blaming, you know, the poor families of those individuals for feeling sad that they had died, blaming everybody but himself, mm-hmm. turning everywhere but inwards. And yeah. I don't know that this press conference was so terribly different than what we've seen in terms of his deflective performance over the past 12 months.
Yeah, and you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, I can't imagine he's going to resign at this point. I mean, he says he's not going to resign.
No, he says he's not going to resign. I mean, I think there's people looking to take him on, so we'll see what happens in 2022.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, for sure. And, well, he's losing Democrats in New York, so that's a problem.
That's true.
Sophie, Just the News AM, 9 a.m. Eastern.
9 a.m. Eastern. Tomorrow we're doing a full Cuomo show, so join us then.
Come on. It doesn't get better, I mean, in a way, than a full Cuomo show. You're doing the whole, well, I don't want to talk about the full Monty, but the full Cuomo tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern. All right, thanks. I need to stop talking. All right, that does it for us here on the Water Cooler. Mike Pompeo, we appreciate him being on the show today. Tomorrow, Pastor Brian Gibson on the show, and quite a few more folks. See you tomorrow.